cities are the result of generations of change, growth and heritage. And more often than not, this balance is tipped more heavily towards the change and development part of the spectrum. Sydney is a case in point. I mean, there's a city that's had its fair share of change. So the Museum of Sydney's just launched an exhibition that looks at what's been demolished in that city for good and for ill. Cathy Peters went along to preview the exhibition and see if you can recognise this ABC voice from the 70s.
In the heart of Sydney, where real estate values have been manoeuvred even above those of Manhattan, where financiers, promoters, architects, developers compete to send the skyline and the profits ever higher, the final say in the shape of the city now rests with the humblest workers of all in the construction industry, the builders' labourers. And all through the convictions of this one builders' labourer, whose only stake in the real estate bonanza of Sydney is a small home unit, heavily mortgaged, 7 miles out in the red brick wasteland of the western suburbs.
The union took a stand in support of progressive architects and town planners who believed that this beautiful part of the botanical gardens, and including these three trees, should not be destroyed.
That's Jack Mundy, leader of the then Builders Labourers Federation of New South Wales and pioneer of Australia's green bans back in the early 70s, when this union led the fight to stop the wholesale demolition of many heritage and green spaces throughout the city. Before Jack, we heard Carolyn Jones from a Four Corners program in 1973. And even then, real estate values in Sydney were skyrocketing, and people came out onto the streets to stop the bulldozers, similar to what's happening today with WestConnex. Now, some 40 years later, the Museum of Sydney has launched an exhibition about what this city has lost over the past 100 years or so, and also what's been gained. For curator Dr. Nicola Teffer, it's not all a tale of woe, as she told our group of journalists at a preview of the exhibition last week.
I didn't go into it thinking this is going to be a depressing tale of woe, and I had people say to me, oh my God, you're going to hand out a glass of whiskey, you know, as people come in just to sort of steel themselves for what it's going to be like. But that's not how I entered into it. I really felt this is really about a story about the transformation of the city and helping people to understand why the city changes and how it changes and how we want it to change. We want it to adapt to us. We don't want to be stuck with old technologies. So, no, I didn't find it depressing at all.
I could go on for a lot longer.
Just the quick overview, is it 13 sites of buildings that have been demolished, and it covers a time frame from 1882, when the Garden Palace was destroyed by fire, to 2008 at the end of the exhibition, when the Kent Brewery was redeveloped as a Central Park development. And what we're looking at are the ways in which the city has had to change and adapt to changing populations and industries, and the forces that have driven change within the city. So some of the sites have more than, you know, one demolished building on them. So Benlock Point here transitions through a number of sites, as does State Office Block. So we're looking at the transitions of individual sites and over a kind of period of time between 2008 and 1882, and over the sort of geography of just the central business district of the city. So it goes from Benlong Point in the north to the brewery, Central Park down on the south, from the Garden Palace at the east to Piemont on the west. So there's 13 sites to look at. Each site is self-contained and is very rich, and some tell simple stories, some are a bit more complex, but I'm happy to talk to any of you about the details of any sites.
It's an interesting choice, the actual title, demolition. I mean, immediately it gives the impression that we're looking at a city that has been demolished. And of course, all cities have been demolished, but Sydney has often been, you know, criticised because of this demolition character, the fact that so much of the city was lost at specific times.
Well, as you say, all cities have been demolished at one point or another and rebuilt again. And that's the story of cities, that they have to continually change and adapt to the changing needs of their population, whether that's technological, industrial, demographic. You know, people move in and out of cities, industries move in and out of cities, and technologies change. So I think, you know, we need to see demolitions as part of the city's evolution. It's part of the process of the city becoming itself and growing into, you know, what it needs to be next. I think in Sydney, our responses to demolitions have changed markedly over the years. So in the 1920s and 30s, when Sydney was going through a massive infrastructure building program, not unlike the one we're undergoing today, demolitions were seen as quite a positive sign of progress within the city, that the city was getting better and better as it left its past behind. And also in the 1930s, there wasn't a real sense of attachment to Sydney's past. It wasn't considered to be kind of almost long enough to be of significance. And Sydney was very sort of forward-focused, forward-looking and embracing the future rather than holding on to the past. And in the 1960s, again, another wave of demolitions for skyscrapers and the city becoming more denser, the central Sydney district going up because it couldn't go out. Demolitions again were seen as part of a positive sign of progress. But in the 1970s, that really started to shift. And from the 1970s and 1980s, as buildings were demolished, Sydneysiders had a much greater sense of heritage, of what heritage was and what was being lost. And that galvanised things like the green bands and resident action groups. And because of that, you know, buildings were saved. Of course, we don't look at that in the exhibition because we're only looking at the demolished buildings, not the ones that were nearly demolished. But I mean, places like the Hyde Park Barracks and the Mint buildings were nearly demolished.
Actors Equity has lost its final legal bid to save Sydney's historic Regent Theatre. Civic reporter Michael Rowland says the Court of Appeal this morning supported an earlier Land and Environment Court judgment allowing for the theatre's demolition.
Both courts have ruled that a government decision to remove conservation orders protecting the Regent was valid. Actors Equity went to the Court of Appeal in a last-ditch attempt to save the building they claim is an important part of Sydney's entertainment history. Today's judgment paves the way for the theatre to be torn down and replaced with a multi-storey office block. Actors Equity, which has fought a four-year battle to retain the 60-year-old building, says the only thing that can now stop the bulldozers is an outcry from the public.
And of course the Rocks was saved. I mean, the whole of the Rocks, which was a huge success for the Green Band.
Yeah, I mean, the Rocks, much of the Rocks was slated for demolition, just as the Queen Victoria Building was also slated for demolition. I mean, there's an interesting story of Sydney just in terms of what could have been demolished. But yeah, the Rocks were saved in the 1970s through resident action groups and community action groups, heritage conservation groups and the, you know, Builders Labourers Federation. And in the exhibition we actually have a video of heritage people and artists talking about their experience of heritage in Sydney. And of course one of our people we interviewed was Jack Mundy talking about the BLF and the Green Bands.
So tell me a little bit about your sense of what positive areas have emerged from the ruins of demolished areas in Sydney. Can we just look at that? Because these are of course encompassed in the exhibition.
Well, I think one of the most positive stories, and there are a fair number of positive stories in the exhibition, but the first one you'll see when you enter the exhibition is the story of the Sydney Opera House, which of course is now World Heritage listed, unlikely to ever be demolished, but it is on the site of a number of demolitions beforehand, such as the tram sheds, which stood there immediately before the Opera House, and before the tram sheds were there was a fort, and before the fort was there was a hut that was built for Bennelong, and before Bennelong was there, there were lime kilns that were used for burning oyster shells to create mortar for the first brick buildings that were built in Sydney. So the transitions of that site go from hut to fort to tram sheds to Opera House. You know, that's a really positive story because at the end of that process of transition, we've ended up with something that, you know, brands our city, which is, I hesitate to use a word, but is an icon.
How significant is the Theatre Royal in Australia's cultural life?
Firstly, there's been a theatre on the site since 1855. It's always been a theatre, as it were. Secondly, it's a theatre where all the greats have played. Thirdly, it's the last remaining theatre of its type. When that goes, forget what it was like ever to sit in a 19th century theatre with brass rails and plush seats and a bit of kind of chandeliers, etc. Now get ready for the cement box theatres that will come in. You know, we have Gough Whitlam on our side, telegrams and cables come from overseas, from the Royal Shakespeare Company, from British Equity, from Sybil Thorndike, today from Don Dunstan, the Premier of South Australia, from the 3,000 members of the National Trust in Victoria. There's an enormous feeling that suddenly we have to simply say stop, that this is part of our heritage, this belongs here to Australia, and it's about time that we started to conserve parts of Australia which belong to the history of Australia.
And what about some other sites? I mean, there is an iconic site which was a cultural heart of the city around Rose Street where a lot of buildings were lost. And in this exhibition, you've sort of recreated some of what that area was like with the artisans, with the artists, with the cafes, Cafe Society.
Yeah, Rowe Street was a real hub of activity in the 1950s and 60s, in the post-war years, and it was demolished in 1972, along with the Hotel Australia, which sat alongside it, and the Theatre Royal, which was also in very close proximity. So this sort of nexus of creativity and artistry, it was all offset by the magnificent Hotel Australia, which was built in the 1890s and also had an extension, a 1930s, an Art Deco, you know, very Hollywood glamour extension that went to Martin Place. And that whole site was pretty much sold off and demolished in the 1970s to become the MLC Centre with its plaza, its pedestrian plaza and its office block tower. So what we lost on that site was this 19th century enclave of sort of bohemianism and chic cosmopolitanism. And what we got instead was an award-winning modernist development that incorporates a pedestrian plaza, which tried to sort of integrate the public sphere into the precinct, and which addressed itself to Martin Place and the kind of civic ceremonial precinct that Martin Place has become since the 1930s. So we lost something, but we gained something else. And I think now and in the decades to come, people will really look at the MLC Centre as one of those examples of Sydney's shining hope for the future in the 1970s, that progress and forward future thinking and modernism were part of, you know, a story that Sydney was telling itself at that time, that I think we'll appreciate even more as the years go by.
Sydney had told itself that story with the construction of the Garden Palace in the Botanic Gardens, and there's a wonderful part of the exhibition here showing photos of this extraordinary building, which I hadn't realised was so large. Like, it was a very, very big building.
Yeah, I was surprised myself when I saw the Garden Palace and how huge it was and the space that it occupied on the Botanical Gardens. And it was a massive building, and I don't really think we have any sense of the scale of it today. It was an enormous building, and it burnt down in a cataclysmic fire in 1882, and it only stood there for 3 years. But it was always intended as a temporary structure. It was built of wood and glass. It was an exhibition building that was put up in an incredibly short period of time, like from design to completion was only 9 months. The story that it told of Sydney and to the Sydneysiders was one of incredible dynamism, to be able to design and build that building and bring all the produce, well, not all the produce, but, you know, representations of other nations, of their trade, their industry, their manufactures, all to this, you know, this southern offshoot, a colonial offshoot, was a real marking, you know, it was a real turning point for Sydney. It really marked Sydney's entry as a global city.
That was Kathy Peters with Dr. Nicola Teffer, who's curator of that exhibition. It's called Demolished Sydney, and it's on for the next 6 months at the Museum of Sydney.